This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
And coming up in this hour, our in-focus discussion will be about homophobia in schools and what's being done about it, what's not being done about it. And
must have touched everyone at some point who's listening today.
I think so, whether it be yourself or a family member or friend
kids
or whatever. And we're going to try and talk about the way we can equip ourselves perhaps a little bit better.
It'll help you develop skills in communication and negotiation around relationship issues.
Very conversation good. This morning. Nick, would you like to introduce our guest?
I'd love to. We have Athi Kokonis, who's an educator with Family Planning Victoria, with us. Good morning, Athi.
Good morning.
And welcome. And Daniel Marshall from the Australian Research Centre in Sex Health Society at La Trobe University, known as ARCHES. And you're working on a project, Beyond Homophobia, developing a blueprint for same-sex attracted and transgendered youth futures in Victoria. Welcome, Daniel. And what is the future for same-sex attracted kids in schools? The past has been pretty bleak.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me on the program today. And apologies in advance, I have a bit of a cold. But I think there's a very bright future for same-sex attracted and transgender young people in Victoria. What we can reflect on in the last 10 years of same-sex attracted and transgender youth support groups is that young people have found a whole range of exciting ways of living their lives, and I think there's a lot of excitement out there about what young people can do with their lives.
But is school a safe place? The research is not really suggesting, especially in the country.
Yeah. Well, it depends on which school you go to. Because schools vary greatly in culture. You can find schools where they won't tolerate any sort of bullying at all, whether it be homophobic or racially motivated. And those sorts of schools are better for all students. And then you can have some schools where the culture is, say, for example, a very elite private school for boys, where the culture is really hard to fight against. I mean, people send their children to that school because of that culture.
Yes, so they don't want any change.
No, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, you've got something to say on that one.
Oh, sure. There's no doubt that schools are the most dangerous place for same-sex attracted young people. Writing themselves in again, a national report on the well-being of same-sex attracted young people conducted by ARCHES demonstrated that. So schools are very unsafe
schools
places.
And sports clubs.
Yeah.
Sporting clubs.
Let's wind back a little. Athi, Family Planning Victoria. My experience of Family Planning Victoria was sex education in primary
That's
school.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And here we are. We've got an educator from Family Planning Victoria talking about same-sex and transgendered issues for young people in schools. Tell us a little bit about Family Planning Victoria and the kinds of things that you're involved in, I guess.
Well, we teach sex education from about grade 3, 4, all the way through to year 12. And we have people ask for specific sessions on homophobia, gender and power. But we also do lots and lots and lots of that sort of very basic sex education, contraception and STIs and safer sex. Our policy is to include same-sex attraction in all our conversations.
Right.
So if we were going into a school to talk about contraception and STIs, well, you would start off talking about what safer sex is. Okay, the safest kind of sex is sex with yourself. Okay. That one's really easy. So who else can you have sex with? Someone of the opposite sex, someone of the same sex. Okay, what's the differences there? Well, obviously, contraception is not an issue if you're having same-sex relationships, but it is an issue if you're having opposite-sex relationships. So that is part of what we say every single time when we're covering those sorts of issues. So it's not about isolating same-sex attraction in its own little ghetto. Mm. It's about having it as part of the program of normal human beings. Mm. And so we really try to follow that policy, even with our primary school
programs.
What's
the response from schools?
Yeah, that's my question. If we're talking about schools being dangerous places, because I would think some schools cope better with that.
It has a lot to do with our way of dealing with it. Some schools, you've got the kids where they just can't accept it. And then other schools, you just know that if you've got 200 Year 10 boys in front of you, that someone's going to go, all that grumbling, and they've got to sort of nudge each other and make a joke.
Yeah.
And there are ways to deal with that. If it's a very aggressive, then you come down hard on it and talk about how Australia is a democratic country, people have a right to choose who they have sex with and who they love, so get over yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The other way of dealing with it is saying, oh yeah, I know you have to make those noises because this is Australia and Australia's homophobic, so but you don't have to do that with me because I'm not going to judge you. And so just relax.
Yeah, I love it.
So you have a variety of approaches, and we get really good at kind of thin slicing the group.
Mm-hmm.
And working out which approach is best, whether it's hardline, a joke, or follow me on a journey and I'll take you somewhere new.
Yep. My other question, I guess, is do you ever have schools that tell you where to draw the line?
Yes.
And how do you deal with that?
Well, it's particularly in primary schools where we find that. What we say is we will answer all questions that children raise with us. So if it's a question about how do two women have babies, we will answer that.
Mm.
If it's about do people only have sex with the opposite sex, we will answer that. Can you have different sort of families with two mums and two dads? We will answer that. It's actually much rarer than you think. Most schools are okay with it.
Yep.
And if the school doesn't specify, if they don't actually point that out, then we talk about, particularly in puberty, about how people have same-sex crushes and that's really normal, and you don't know who, you know, a lot of people just need to take their time to work out who they're going to be attracted to in their life and to not stress about it, and that it's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
wherever you end up is okay.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then we have other schools who specifically want us to talk about it.
Okay.
And so we will do something on, you know, families. Draw me a family or make me a family with these little picture cards. Okay, are there any other types of family? Yes, you can have two mums and children. You can have two dads and children. So, you know, all that sort of stuff. That we can provide for schools.
Will you ever refuse to go into school because they say we don't want you to talk about contraception or we don't want you to talk about same-sex relationships or transgenderism or whatever?
People ring us.
Yep.
So at the negotiating stage, we're actually very clear about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to balance it up. Are these kids going to get any kind of conversation
yep.
at all
yep.
about being safe? And so, you know, it's a balancing act. Mm. But most people are fine.
Mm.
Slipping.
Well, hats off to Family Planning Victoria, I say. That sounds fantastic, Ethie. We will continue with you. Daniel, tell us about Beyond Homophobia and the current project that you're working on.
The Beyond Homophobia project is designed to build on the findings that came out of the Writing Themselves In Again national report that I spoke about earlier. And it was designed to provide an opportunity to talk to workers who have been doing this great work over the last 10 years around reforming services and delivering inclusive mainstream services to same-sex attracted and trans young people so that we can compile this knowledge and disseminate it to the broader service community in schools and youth services so that there's a greater opportunity for people in mainstream services to be able to do the great work that people have been doing in terms of providing services to same-sex attracted and trans young people.
So you're not operating from this is a woeful situation, we've all got to pull up our act and get better. You're actually looking for what's positive, what's working and going from there sort of thing?
Well, I think in Victoria we're in a very unique historical position of being able to see what's changed over the last 10 years since the first Writing Themselves In report was released. Mm. We then were able to see particular youth groups for gay young people being funded. We've been able to see an increase in the amount of training that's been provided in schools, as you've just been discussing. So we can see that there's been a shift, and we can see that there's been real expertise built up in Victoria in particular areas, but we also know that it's in particular areas and it's something that still needs to be mainstreamed. You know, we know that there are some schools that do it well. We know that there are some youth services that do it well, but we know that there, in the main, there needs to be more improvement.
So what's the picture these days for bullying and homophobia in schools? How would you describe it, Athi or Daniel? It's still critical?
Well, I mean, the Writing Themselves In Again data is came out in 2006, that's not so long ago, mm-hmm. that found that 74% of, for the young people who had experienced verbal and physical homophobic abuse, 74% of that happened at schools.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a damning statistic, and it's something that we still need to go by. But based on the conversations we've been having with people in schools, youth workers, and young people themselves, we know that there are improvements in some schools, and that over the last 10 years, Writingham says, and again, found that when schools did seek to make a change in their practice, it did make a big difference on the young people's experience of that schools. And so that's the really encouraging finding from Writingham says, and again, is that if we can deliver the change, then it will make a difference.
I've been in situations where I've had to go in and PD staff about homophobia, because we do lots of teacher training as well. That's a really big part of what we do. And you know, members of the staff have seen homophobic bullying as a really big issue. I'll front up, there'll be 65, 70 people in front of me, and I will know immediately who the resistors are, because they will sit up the back, there'll be a row of 10 teachers with their arms folded across their chests, and, you know, they're not going to budge from their point of view. That is a real problem, because you have to have absolutely every single teacher on board. So, you know, essentially they work for the government. They have to follow law.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to discriminate.
Yeah.
But it's...
discrimination is so subtle as well, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, exactly. And there's a sense that until you actually budge those people, it's really difficult. It's very difficult to change the entire culture.
Because they can just turn a blind eye to bullying.
That's
and stuff
right.
like that. They don't actually do anything active in it.
And they will say things like, well, if he or she just stopped acting that way, they won't get picked on.
Let's continue this, because I think we're going to... This is a lot to talk about in terms of who's responsible and how we help manage it. We are speaking with Athi Kokonis from Family Planning Victoria and Daniel Marshall from the Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society at La Trobe Uni on the issues of homophobia for young people in schools. Athi Kokonis from Family Planning Victoria and Daniel Marshall from Archers at La Trobe University in the studio with us. And before that track, we were talking about... schools and culture of schools, and Athi was speaking about going in and doing teacher training about issues surrounding homophobia and bullying, and the fact that you often meet resistance, and you can pick that within about 30 seconds of walking in the room.
Absolutely. You can see it on their faces. And, you know, and sometimes you have to get quite brutal and talk about the fact that there's, you know, a link with suicide and bullying. And then you talk about... I usually ask them how many kids they've got at school. Okay, 1,000. So that means you've got about 150 kids who are same-sex attracted. You've got maybe 300 to 400 who question their sexuality at some stage in their life. So, okay, which of those kids can you afford to lose? Let's line them up. You point them out to me. Which of those kids do you think it's okay to lose to suicide? Even when you get that blatant, some people are still resistant.
Yeah, it's
absolutely
interesting, isn't
still
it?
Resistant.
And sorry, Daniel. Yeah, go on.
And I just think it's just worthwhile to add that homophobia impacts, you know, upon a broader range of young people as well. You know, not just people who are same sex attracted
exactly.
or who are questioning. And so I think that argument is also a powerful argument for promoting a broader ownership around action in relation to this issue.
Yeah, we were reading some research which talked about the fact that the situation still seems to be left up to individual kids to solve their own problems, and that young people who are not sure what to do, not sure where to go, who are potentially feeling suicidal, still aren't necessarily picked up because they're lost in the system. It maybe is up to individual teachers to do something, and those teachers aren't necessarily equipped, or they're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, because do they break confidentiality with that student who's come to them? The student doesn't always know who to go to. We've got a systemic problem, haven't we?
That's right. And some schools actually want to change the culture, and so they'll start with the small things and try and create a situation where people will at least know that the administration backs them or that the staff back them, even if there are some kids, you know, who continue with their bullying. At least they know where to go. There are some schools that try that and work really hard at it. There are other schools that are so resistant that even if they actually want to teach young men masculinity, sexuality, all that sort of stuff, they'll actually deny same-sex attraction in that whole process.
Well, because there'd be schools, and I'm thinking a very good friend of mine who worked in such a school until recently, where there was a homophobic attitude towards the teachers. So yes. If teachers are getting bullied or, you know, abused by kids for being gay, there's just absolutely no way that any gay kids are going to start feeling confident about coming forward.
Yeah,
as well,
it's not safe for the staff. It's going to be worse for the kids.
And how dare the administration allow that to happen to their teachers and then to their kids? Yeah. How dare they? You know, because workplaces are supposed to be safe.
Yeah, I think the attitude is the same as with the kids. Well, it's your classroom, you sort it out, you know.
And it's not always safe, is it? We've had a text in from someone that says, I was gay bashed at high school and I have ongoing lumbar and cervical spine damage and emotional and mental trauma. So, you know, it's a lifelong thing, isn't it? Once it happens to someone, it's pretty hard to get over. What are kind of survey results about those long-term impacts, you know?
Well, writing them says in again... also found that people who received homophobic, verbal and physical homophobic abuse were more likely to self-harm and to use drugs. And so there's that causal relationship between those experiences of abuse, which also provide a really powerful rationale for preventing the abuse to occur in the first place. And, of course, where the school is the location where most of that occurs, there's a real rationale for action there. And I think the one of the real challenges for preventing this type of behaviour is to try to create schools as a preventative space in relation to homophobic bullying, because we know that many people attempt self-harm and suicide before anyone knows that they are gay or lesbian. And so there is a real onus on schools to be preventative spaces, for there to be inclusive curriculum, and of course that starts with having staff that can promote these messages. And so if there are difficulties in the staff room, then it's impossible really to be able to take it out to the school community in a systemic way.
We've actually learnt how to we've learnt to train teachers to get over their own personal feelings in terms of racism. I mean, let's face it, you go to any school and you're going to find amongst the staff a variety of different attitudes towards racism. Some people are on board about preventing it. Other people know it's part of their job to support the school and the school rules. Exactly. But somehow that doesn't seem to translate properly over into homophobia. You know, there's still this feeling that because I think that, you know, all gay people should go to hell kind of business, that I don't have to actually support kids who are being bullied because they might, because they don't fit, you know, the classic model of being male or female.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've gotten over it when it comes to racism. We've learnt that message, and the kids have learnt that message reasonably well. And so they have the skills. They just don't have the will to push it across the line in terms of homophobia. And when you talk to kids, though, and because they've learnt the message about racism, and you connect the two ideas and you say to them, you know, what if, instead of saying, oh, that's so gay, as young people are saying.
Aren't they what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if you said, oh, that's so Chinese.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. If he wasn't so Chinese, then people wouldn't pick on him. It sounds ridiculous.
Yes.
It sounds so ridiculous. And they actually get it. So I think that there's value in working out, in looking at what's worked before and using those strategies. And also saying to teachers, I'm sorry, you can be homophobic in your own personal life and have those attitudes, but you work for the government, you work in a government school, you have to follow law, you don't get to decide. And I mean, I'm a bit of a hardliner, I'd say, right, this is it. If you can't follow those rules in this school, then maybe you should work for somebody else.
Yeah.
But this thing about kids saying, oh, that's so gay, I reckon if you challenge them, they'd say, I don't mean it to be homophobic, but they don't get the idea of language, and they don't know how powerful it is to somebody who is gay who hears that.
Which means you have to be a little bit more persistent and a bit more creative.
Yep.
Okay, let's just say that you're sitting in the classroom and you are same-sex attracted, or you think you are. You don't know, but there's this sort of grey feeling about where you are, as you know, in terms of sexual orientation, you know, in terms of identity. And the only word you know for it is gay or fag or queer. Poor for queer. Exactly, exactly. And you hear those words time and time and time and time again in the negative. How are you going to feel about who you are? And I think that we underestimate kids. If we are willing and take them on a journey, particularly using things like visualization, creating some empathy, I think they can work with us. You know, I think we just underestimate how hard it's going to be. Whereas I see fabulous kids every day and know that they're up for the challenge. It's often the teachers aren't.
Is it because we assume that homophobia exists and there's nothing we can do about it?
Yes, I think so. I think we don't see it as something we can change or worth the effort to change.
And my other question, I suppose, that the whole racism, homosexual comparison, well, you can't choose what race you are, but you can choose your sexuality, can't you?
Exactly.
Do you hear a lot of that?
Oh, you're bloody well better. And
We don't engage in that kind of conversation anymore because there's no point. As soon as someone wants to find a cause, they're looking for a cure.
They're looking for an escape for their own prejudices.
That's right. That's right. And you can't, you know, there's no benefit to that sort of discussion. And I think that we're a little bit over it too. You know, it's like if you're saying the same thing for 20 years, you get a bit tired.
I guess you do. We've had another message in. I went to a Catholic boys' school in the early 90s that made all the year 7 to 9 boys shower together after sport, and we'd be bullied by teachers if we tried to avoid it. Now, I'm not quite sure what.
What's the point? Where,
Mark.
Well, in that situation, everyone who works with young people knows during the ages of that sort of puberty stage, you feel so shy about your body. You know, if you might be a mature year seven, you might be a little boy at year seven, and so that's just terrible.
I remember
terrible
kids
cruelty.
Getting teased for being early bloomers.
Yes.
You know, for So it's
That's
shocking.
It's a shocking thing to do anyone, I suppose, just at that really delicate. Delicate age.
That's right.
We've had another message in that says, you know, it's a great interview and really enjoying it, but there are some who do recover from that stuff in the schoolyard.
Yes.
Which I think is, you know, at the start of the interview when I was asked, what is the future for same-sex attracted and trans young people? And I have a very optimistic view of the future, even though we all know that there are, you know, profound, entrenched difficulties that many same-sex attracted and trans young people, but not all, endure and survive. And that's before I think you made the comment around being forced to use the suicide statistics to try and get people's attention. And I think that's an ongoing tension that all of us who work in this field are always aware of, that in order to get people's attention, in order to try and mobilise activity around this issue, often we are forced to use the data about the worst experiences that these young people experience. But we don't want to re-pathologize them and sort of re-depict them as being the sad and the mad and the bad. And so it's about focusing on the explosion in the visibility of same-sex attracted and transgender young people in Victoria over the last decade, and being able to say, you know, these people have great lives, and it's a systemic problem, and the problem is with the system and with the people that fail to provide appropriate services rather than with any deficiency within the young people themselves.
I think we have to take into account, though, most of mental illness in adulthood, about 74% of it surfaces in adolescence, and there's probably, and I don't know if the stats are there, and Anne Mitchell's actually starting to look at this, doing some research in this area about depression and anxiety in same-sex attracted people. And I suspect, and I mean, it looks like there's going to be a higher incidence or prevalence of depression, anxiety for young people, and probably some of it resulting from their fights and efforts at school to come through.
Absolutely.
The future can look a bit grim for people in a more general.
But I guess we don't want people to feel hopeless.
No.
Well, that's true.
And that's really
God, we survive.
Yes. look at us, we're on radio.
A little bit of hard work.
I work with someone who's such a kind, generous, wonderful woman, and she looks towards the future of everyone holding hands and singing Kumbaya. We're all kind of, you know, all together. And that would be fantastic if we could all do that. However,
you obviously didn't do Boy Scouts. Flashbacks here.
The Kumbaya bit that's getting there, sorry.
Well, I'm kind of thinking, well, the most that we can, it's a democracy, and the most that we can expect is that people follow the rules of law and behave in an appropriate way. Because after all, it is a democracy and we are able to have different sets of beliefs and values. So, you know, I don't want to sound pessimistic, because I'm actually not, because every day I work towards creating that sort of better model.
It's there's a balance, isn't there, between being a realist and being an optimist.
Exactly.
And looking at that. We're going to play a music track, and when we come back, we'll wrap it up and let's look at some of the positive things that are there. We've got the Beyond Homophobia Project, we've got the SAFE website, which I'd really love to talk about, from Family Planning Victoria, the Rainbow Network. There are a lot of resources there. We've got new government policy. So let's look at some of the things that are happening and see where the positive future is. You're on Joy on 94. Dusty Springfield, over and over.
And over.
And over. We've got about 5 minutes to wrap up our conversation on homophobia in schools. Athy, Family Planning Victoria's got some fantastic stuff going on, apart from your good self, who's obviously the best asset Family Planning Victoria could possibly have. The SAFE website.
Yes, it's an excellent website. It has lots of ideas on how to actually get things going in your school. It's got ideas for parents who are concerned. It's got resources for young people themselves, and it actually has an audit tool that you can use to assess your school, to find out what the students are feeling. And that's a great place to start, because let the kids tell you what's going on, because sometimes as a teacher you're too busy, and you're sort of walking down the hallways and not seeing what's happening around corners.
Yeah, and Daniel, that was something I was thinking before. What are the kids telling you? What are you learning from, you know, what's the voice of the kids from your project work and stuff?
Well, we haven't done our data collection with young people yet. We have representation from the Out There Youth Council, which has just been established, which is, I've got to get their name right. They just had their first meeting, and I think the formal title is the Out There Rural Youth Council for Sexual Diversity. So went out to Eden a couple of weeks ago for their first meeting, and these young people are talking, you know, the strategies of whole school systemic reform in similar ways to what I guess the new policy supporting sexual diversity in schools outlines. You know, you need work at the curriculum level, you need work at the staff level, you need to work with parents and carers. You know, in a few months' time, once we've done a data collection with young people, I'll be able to get back to you.
And the Rainbow Network, which is part of La Trobe Uni and Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, and that's a really positive thing too, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I guess, you know, it brings together over a couple of dozen of different groups for same-sex attracted and trans and questioning young people around the state. There's a coordinator who works part-time. She's just come on board. Her name's Roz Ward. And for anyone out there who's interested in looking at what groups are running in your particular area, then you could check out the listing of groups, and you could either Google Rainbow Network or go to www.latrobe.edu.au/rainbow.
There are some fantastic resources. We've just had one last SMS in too from Grant, who was bullied on a daily basis at an all-boys school, and his outlet was to WAG school, to avoid, have a day off being bullied. And we talk about all those other outcomes, but there are educational implications too,
exactly.
Which, you know, we could go on for another hour talking about those, but, you know, people just don't go to school because
that's
it's
right.
too tough. And from an education point of view, schools, at the very least, need to be finding ways to keep these people in school.
Yeah, well, exactly.
School's your gateway to where you're going, like it or not. So if you're being excluded, if you're being told to get out, then your life opportunity is being shut off.
Yeah. Look, if anyone has concerns for their own school or their own community, they can get in touch with Family Planning. We have a fantastic team who run fantastic workshops, and we could actually put one together for your staff, particularly on homophobia, on how to actually start the process of change in your school. I mean, that's the sort of thing that we do.
Yep. All right, so we've got two fantastic starting points. We've got Family Planning Victoria, we've got La Trobe Uni, however you get into it, and the Rainbow Network are two terrific places to start for parents, teachers, schools who want to do something about the system. And I guess even young people who are listening, if you can't think of where else to go, get on to...
The Action Centre have a program called YAC, a Young People Support Group, so... That's a fantastic place to start.
Yeah. Mm. There is a lot out there, and there's a lot to be positive about. There's still a lot of work to do, and we've got places to go, I guess. And it would be great to have this conversation further down the track when we've got some more stuff, when the Beyond Homophobia project is potentially further down the track. Athy, we'd love to have you back anytime you've got anything you want to talk to us about. Daniel Marshall and Athy Kokonis, thank you so much for joining us and enlightening us about the issues around homophobia in schools and what's...
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.